FM 104's Strawberry Alarm Clock, the podcast.
Dublin's FM 104, it is the Strawberry Alarm Clock, and in studio is the man behind the character that's very famous. Paul Howard is here.
Colours up, guys. It's me.
The Rossmeister General, of course, Ross O'Carroll Kelly, and you're here because there's two things in the pipeline. Well, one is already done. And
yeah, they're out of the pipeline.
They're out of the pipeline.
They've emerged from the pipeline.
So you got to play Postcards from the Ledge in the Gaiety.
Yeah, we're going back to the theatre with Ross, and it's set in 2029.
Yeah,
and so all of the last Ross play and this one are set in the future. Part of the reason is Rory Nolan, who plays Ross O'Carroll Kelly, is sadly getting older, and we can't reverse age him.
Okay, right.
So I can't sort of jump back and forth like I can in the books.
Okay,
and his daughter Honor, who some people might know from the books, she's the child from hell, really.
Yeah.
She's grown up now and she's about to get married.
Right.
And she's about to get married to somebody that Ross doesn't approve of. So on the day of the wedding, he's working that morning and he's called out to sell a house in, the address is 22 Glenageary Crescent. Yeah. And yeah, as you can tell from the name, it's in Sallynoggin.
Yeah.
Because he's working for Hook, Line and Sinker, the estate agents. And he has to sell this property. And he's putting a value on it. And yeah, when he goes out there, he realises it's his childhood home. It's yeah, the house he grew up in.
Wow.
And so this kind of sends him on a trip down memory lane on the morning of his daughter's wedding.
Wow.
Rory Nolan is just superb. He really is. To, you know, he holds it. It's almost 2 hours long. The
wow,
show's about an hour
a long
and 50
time.
Minutes. He just holds it together so brilliantly.
Did you have to audition him? Like, did you audition for Ross's? You would have.
He came in and read for the part early on. Anyway, the first time I met him was in Maureen's Bar at the back of the Olympia Theatre.
Oh, great place.
And he was coming in and Anne said, you got to, you know, he's going to come in and read. And he had memorised this entire monologue from one of the Ross O'Carroll Kelly books.
Wow.
And when he came in, he bawled this monologue at me in this Ross voice and sort of gave me the guns at the end, gave me the finger guns. And I was looking at the living, breathing incarnation of the character I created. Like he was Ross. It sort of helps that he played rugby at school and that he's from Killiney, like, you know, so he's not, there's not a lot of method acting going on.
No, he looks,
like,
he's from
that milieu.
He's that guy,
you know?
Yeah.
His face is that guy.
Yeah.
Do
you think of his face now when you're writing it?
I do. It's funny because I think of all of the, when I'm writing the books now, I think of Lisa Lam as Surika, you know, I think of the late Susan Fitzgerald as Fionnuala, I think of Philip O'Sullivan as Charles. I think they've made their characters so much their own on the stage and actually taken them to new places. I think of them differently now, but I do picture their faces when I'm writing the parts now in the books.
When he was sort of in his infancy as a character, Dublin had the Ice Bar and the Four Seasons. We had all these ridiculous places. Has it been harder to find where he exists in Dublin now? Has he had to change where he drinks?
Yeah, it is one of the things.
So
when I look back on those early books, and the early columns, it's like a sort of archaeology of the Celtic Tiger, you know. It's like I'm sort of digging down through layers and I'm saying, remember Reynards, remember that place, you know, Pia Bang Home, all these shops and businesses that were iconic parts of Dublin, really, during commercial icons in Dublin during the Celtic Tiger. And when it ended, they were shuttered within weeks, you know, like within weeks of American banks failing.
Yeah.
The whole social geography of Dublin had changed. And I had to sort of catch up on sort of, mostly it was about places closing. Mostly those, the middle books in the Ross series, which was the kind of recession trilogy, it was about Ross looking around him saying, you know, I remember when this was all nightclubs, you know. And, but there's, I suppose it's picking up again now. So
Absolutely, there are, and
I do have to stay on top of that, you know, because people are really, really quick to tell me on social media,
you said he goes to such and such place. He would never go there. Ross wouldn't be seen dead in that
place. There's 2 million back at work now. The dole queues have been smaller than ever in the last few years.
Where does he go now? Where would he go tonight now if he was out?
Well, I can't really say because his wife might be listening.
probably but like, Sophie's maybe.
Sophie's at the Dune. He'd be regular at Sophie's. Sophie's at the Dune. And
on the roof of the Marker Bar?
The Marker. Yeah, the Marker.
Only in the summertime, though. It's too cold now.
But yeah, his wife, you know, is Sirica is blissfully unaware that he goes anywhere anymore. Okay, you know, okay. And Crystal. I think Crystal is still the thing. Yeah,
they just keep pumping money into it.
So they'd be his blazes. But of course, he's you know, in the books, he's sort of 36, 37 now. Right. And that's very, very old to be on the social scene in Dublin now, you know?
Yeah.
Like sort of the young people own the city now, you know?
But he doesn't realise.
No.
Brilliant. So apart from the play, so that's Postcards from the Ledge, that's in the Gaiety, 25th of October to the 11th of November.
Yeah, it's just 19 shows and we're not going to be extending it. So,
okay.
Yeah. Just 19
and
shows.
Then you've got of course the book, which is Operation Trump's Formation.
Yeah.
They're brilliant titles.
These titles, they you know, sometimes they come to me easily. I knew for ages before I wrote Namma Mia I was going to write a book called Namma Mia.
Fox Rock in a Hard Place is brilliant as well.
And Oh My God Delusion was another one I kind of knew beforehand. That's a good name for a book. And actually sometimes I'll decide a storyline based on the title I've come up
brilliant.
With. But Operation Trump's Formation was originally called The West Wing.
Okay.
And I wasn't really happy with the title.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really happy with the book. I originally wrote the book, I delivered it last December, and the American election had happened, you know, while I was probably three quarters of the way through the book. And I kind of felt that I'd missed something. I like the books to be topical. Like I like to write about the world now, or satirize the world as it is now.
Yeah.
And that the American election, I hadn't, it wasn't present, you know, and so I went away at Christmas, and then I came back in the middle of January and I just rang my editor and said, how would you feel about me tearing the book up and writing a different book?
You started from scratch.
So started from scratch. Wow. I mean, there were elements of the original that I could save, but you know, if you pull something apart like that, it is like taking apart this computer here. You know, that you're just left with parts everywhere, and you think, right, where does anything fit? So it was, it was a tough job, but I'm glad I did it. You know, so I have this storyline in it where Charles runs for election. At the end of the last book, he had this wig which he discovered in the attic and put it on his head, and it gave him a new sense of purpose. Like, you know, he really felt like $1 million. And when he launches this party, New Republic, he's got all the couple of hundred people in the room waiting to hear his vision for the new Ireland. He goes into the bathroom, he washes his hands, and somebody has turned the nozzle on the hand dryer upwards, and when he presses the button, it shoots this hot air through his hair, and it won't stand, the wig won't go down no matter how much lacquer he puts in it. So he actually looks like the president, the current president of the United States. So along with this new image comes this really extremist view of the world. Like, so he believes that the GAA should be, the army should have a presence at every GAA match to stop referees being killed. He thinks that women should be forced to resit their driving tests to prove their competency every 12 months.
Wow.
And he wants to build a wall around Cork.
Well, that's a good idea.
Sensible policies.
I know people would vote for him. A lot of people would. And as a writer, I've noticed all the writers, is Twitter a distraction for you? Because all the writers are brilliant on Twitter. Like, your tweets are very good. There's lots of really good writers who are tweeting a lot.
Yeah.
Should you be working with, are you just thinking, oh, that'd be a good tweet? Hang on a second.
The worst thing about Twitter is that when you're on it, and say if you're up against a deadline and you've sort of said, can I get an extra week?
Yeah.
And your editor is waiting for your manuscript and you're on Twitter, you're caught. You've been caught slacking. But it is a huge distraction. You just need to know when to go off it, because, it, you know, for someone like me who works from home, Twitter is my water cooler.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When I'm boiling the kettle to make some coffee, I go on Twitter just to see what's happening. But you have to know when to leave. The crack is great at the water cooler, but you'll never get anything done in your working day if you spend your whole day at the water cooler.
That's true. And so how many hours a day do you spend?
Writing.
When you're working.
I start early. You know, I like to be at the desk at about six.
Okay.
Six or half six. And I work, I mean, I usually work till kind of five or six.
Really?
Yeah, wow. In the afternoon, yeah.
It's so it's day.
They're long days, especially writing, because it's quite, you know, it's quite intensive.
Yeah.
When I was a full-time sports journalist, I used to have maybe one and a half or two writing days a week, and the rest of the time was phone calls and research and things like that. But now, it's every day.
Wow.
So it's It's tough. It's a lonesome life, you know.
Just me and the cat.
I have a Dal Basset hound, you know, called Humphrey, and we jump in the car every morning, and I go to my house in Wicklow where I work, and I just have him for company all day. And you know, my wife rings me at lunchtime, and I discover that I've forgotten how to talk.
Wow.
You know, because you're sitting there for sort of 7 hours on your own.
Can you put that in an email?
Yeah, it's like those people who are rescued from desert islands, you know, when their first words are always,
Wilson, Wilson, Wilson.
Or Wilson, yeah. Yeah, you found me out. I have a ball with Wilson.
Your ball is your dog.
On it.
Oh, very good.
So you must be really enjoying getting out every night now to go and see plays and talk to people
it
and
is good.
Promote things.
Yeah.
People, I'm only
here. Guys, I'm only here because I was lonely.
I know, yeah. Well, it's good to see you out and about. Paul Howard, the play is Postcards from the Ledge, set in 2029, and that's in the Gaiety, 25th of October till the 11th of November, subject to license, terms and conditions apply, only those dates. And the book, of course, Operation Trump's Formation, is out now. Thanks very much for coming
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We look forward to more from the Rossmeister.
Give you the guns.
Cheers, man.
You've been listening to FM 104's Strawberry Alarm Clock Podcast.